Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October 19th, the Norris Group proudly presents its fifth annual award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joins Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Foreclosure Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Fry Wiles, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. Learn more about the panel and how to attend at isurvivedrealestate.com.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today we have three special guests that are in studio. Lance Martin has been in the real estate business for 24 years as broker-owner of Coldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, which serves the Inland Empire. Lance is an expert in residential REO foreclosure sales and owns offices in several Southern California counties. Mike Novak-Smith is not only one of the largest REO agents in the Inland Empire, but the nation. Mike is in the top 1% of all real estate agents nationwide, and has experience in REO, short sales, bankruptcies, asset management, and negotiating, and he specializes in the Inland Empire as well. Steve Silva owns several businesses, including Market Point Realty and Las Brisas Escrow. Steve's an expert in residential REO sales as well as being a real estate investor. And we go back, I go back with all these guys from the 90s in the last downturn. So welcome to our show. Since all of us were involved in the 90s, I'd probably like to start there and compare the 2007 to 2012 experience with the 90s as far as what's been similar and what's been different. So let's start out with the volume. And Lance, why don't we start with you? As far as the volume of REOs that you had to deal with in the 90s and the 2000s, is it?
Well, the volume certainly was different. I mean, the volume that we dealt with from Inland Empire from, say, 93 through, 2000 was relatively light.
Well, the 90s, just the 90 downturn, say, from 90 to 96, and then 2005 to 2012, those two big segments.
At the time, it seemed like there was a lot of stuff. We felt busy, there was a lot of stuff, but there was nobody like myself or Mike Novak or anybody doing the type of volume of business that we did back in the 90s, but it felt bad. As we started into this new cycle in 2006 or so, the volume, needless, ramped up really quickly, 2006, 7, 8, never seen anything like it, and then it's progressively been slowing down literally to a stop over the last 4 years. So today's volume is, I don't know what to say other than there really is no volume of REO inventory coming into the markets since January of this year. The numbers have been so small. But I will tell you the main distinction between the 90s and today is a certain sense of predictability. I mean, you could look at some data in the 90s and kind of see what was going to come out the other end of the cycle. Today, I don't know what you can look at and make any sort of educated idea of what's going to come out the other end. There's just large, large numbers that don't seem to be moving into the marketplace.
Mike, for you, when did foreclosures peak in this cycle?
I would say they peaked maybe early 09, the most amount of unsold inventory I had. From then, it just seems to, we were fairly consistent in 2010 and 2011. This year, it's gone way down. We're at about half of what we had last year at this time.
Okay.
And it's just, I probably get one REO a week, which is, not really enough to sustain any staff or overhead.
Not when you're used to dealing with, hundreds
right.
of them.
Yeah, you sail through them pretty quick. I mean, the old days, like Lance was saying, we felt really busy, but we didn't have the technology then. We didn't have emails. We didn't have web-based systems. You can do a lot more today with this, the tools that we can use.
One of the things that happened in the 2007 and 8 and so forth is the prices dropped off a cliff, and that was very different than what happened in the 90s. And I remember you and I accidentally entered into a transaction because you were a listing agent and they decided to auction the property off. And I don't know if you remember that, but
Yeah, in Moreno Valley.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where you had tried to get them to be realistic on the price out of the gate, and they refused, and they were always like 2 months behind the price it should have been.
Right, and you supplied me with some comps on a recent HUD sale, I believe it was.
Well, now that was in the 90s when we did the first transaction, but the one I'm mentioning is the one where when it went to sale, you had offers that they had rejected. And then I bought the property at the auction, like a REDC or whatever the other company was. It was like 40% less, and they accepted it.
Right.
And it was sort of like there was a disconnect between, I guess that's the question. The price went down so fast. Was it really hard for the lenders to understand they were about to take that kind of beating? And that's why they drug their feet, is they couldn't believe that that number had changed so quickly?
I believe so. I remember well, this whole thing started, we noticed in 1989 when it first started that we could look out into the future and we knew exactly what was going to happen, when it was going to happen. And I was calling Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and I was talking to somebody in Pasadena. I don't know whether it's Fred or Fannie at the time. And I was talking to this executive VP, and he says, there's no way. There's no way. I said, well, I'm seeing these notices of default. And then he called me and he says, I have 30 properties for you. Thanks for calling me every week. And I was busting him. You know, I was just, it's coming, it's coming. And that's how I got started.
Well, I think
in the
Lance,
early 90s.
What Lance was saying is there was a process. Somebody stopped making the payment.
And we can't find that today.
Right.
We don't know what's going on. We don't know what's
going
to go on in the last quarter of this year. We have no idea, no clue what's going to happen.
Yeah, there's the disconnect that you mentioned. There is a complete disconnect as it relates to the numbers that you can actually look at, the hard data, the notice of defaults, the notice of sales, and what in theory should be coming out the other end. The story that Steve just told, going back to 89 with Fannie and Freddie, I wasn't in the REO until about 93, and I came into it with a whole different story and we don't have time for. But that exact same story I experienced with one of my asset manager, Fannie or Freddie, was actually Fannie, in 2005. And I was looking at that data, similar to Steve calling in 1989 saying it's coming. And the representative at that time was like, oh, no, there's nothing coming. The market's strong. Everything's fine. There's no REO in California. We have one property up in the mountains somewhere, whatever it happened to be. And then literally, not even 12 months later, but, 3, 4, 5, 6 months later, the data was starting to reflect what Steve and I and Mike had been looking at. I says, well, this is fairly predictable. So that disconnect of what appears to be fairly accessible data for everybody to get at didn't seem quite to be hitting home with some of the larger players, which you would have thought would have been looking at the same data and draw some conclusions. But now, at least back in 2006, you could draw some conclusions because there still was a system in place. Now the system is so broken. I don't know what you can look at today and literally say this is what's going to happen in 3, 4, 5, 6 months.
Which is, it's really difficult, obviously, to map out a business plan. And we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but that's the difficulty that we're going to be going into in the next 6 to 12 months is, okay, I'm in a business, you're in a business, okay, what do we do to make a living? And it's challenging. Does it matter that the lenders changed from the 90s to who you're dealing with in the 2006 and beyond? Is mortgage-backed securities is really what I'm hitting on. Has that become a bigger problem to get correct answers or even willingness to foreclose? Has that messed it up somehow?
Well, the difference was in the 90s, we generally dealt with who owned the house. You know, they had their own REO department. You know, you had the process, they controlled it. Any change on a deal, anything you needed to do, the people that could make the decisions is who you were dealing with. Now most of it's outsourced to third-party companies, and it slows the process down because they've got to go ask who really makes the decisions.
Is it hard to know who makes the decisions, and is there a conflict of interest between those people that have an interest in a mortgage-backed security? In other words, it might be in some people's best interest to foreclose, and yet somebody might have a junior tranche that's not going to work out so well.
Yeah, it may be, but I don't think that's the problem.
Okay.
I really don't. I think that talking about contrast between the 90s down cycle and what we've been experiencing in the last 5, 6 years, it's just the sheer amount of depreciation that we've seen. I mean, in the 90s, as bad as it felt, and it felt pretty bad, I may be wrong, but I think we saw maybe a 25% drop in property values from
total.
Peak. total?
5% a year, very methodical.
Okay. And that was somewhat manageable. Yeah. I mean, you had a $200,000 house that was selling for $150,000, and as bad as that felt for those people that were $50,000 upside down, it didn't encompass the entire marketplace. Now you look at where we're at today. For the most part, Southern California peaked in the summer of 2006. And in some markets have come down, you know, 70% from the peak. And it's affected so many people. And frankly, everyone was using their houses as ATMs, and the values were just ridiculous. So I don't know that it's the problem with the type of financing or the mortgage bank or mortgage-backed securities portion of it. I just really think that the values came down so fast and so much that the magnitude of the problem is just much, much larger than the system is able to bear.
And usually, correct me if I'm wrong, but from an investor's point of view, whenever you have a new round of foreclosures, whether it's the 90s or 2007, the lenders usually are slow to react to take a loss, an early loss. They're usually hanging on to get a number that's not
Absolutely.
Realistic. Right. And in this particular case, they started losing 3 or 4% a month in the Inland Empire.
Correct.
And there probably was even an absence of comps. It just was, there were no buyers, and it had to go down to a level to where it found somebody like myself who was going to write a check, and it had to make a lot of sense.
Well, that's correct. I had, at one point, I think I had 300 active listings when I had more than that at one point, but when I hit 300 active, I think we closed 15 deals that month. And that's because 90% of them are way overpriced.
Right.
So it takes a while for reality to set in. Just as the same token, you know, the prices are going up like now and the appraisers are coming in low. It's the same thing. It just takes a while for it all to match.
Well, sometimes the data right. is lagging, and that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
An appraiser can look at somebody willing to buy something and doesn't show evidence, and anyone else has agreed to that same number. But one of the things that's, involved in the appraisal world is the concept of substitution. So you've bought this one, it seems to be a high price, but try to substitute it for the same dollar amount, and is that house available? And the answer is no.
Right.
And that's how we're starting to have this escalation. Any of the Alphabet Soup loan mod programs been successful in your guys' opinion as far as, you know, what they've attempted to do?
I don't know, with possibly the exception, and it's too early to tell, but I do think it will be successful, and that's HARP too. I think the HARP 2 refis that are going on, the program seems to make a little more sense. The numbers that I've heard, I don't know how accurate they are, but the numbers I've heard is that the volume of HARP 2 refinances that are in the pipeline are increasing, and thank God, because at least the lending industry can do refis because we're not doing resales. But prior to HARP 2, and that just kicked in, what, early this year, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, and I think just within the last 60 days, you know, they've been able to do HARPs for outside companies. You know, Wells can now do refis for Chase and vice versa. But prior to that, every other, you know, Hope for homeowners and HAFA and whatever they are. I forget. There's so many of them I've forgotten. I think they're all, for the most part, been a dismal failure and have done more harm than good.
And HARP 2 is basically a program where you can refi something, a home that's over-encumbered, up to what percentage? Is there a limit?
I believe it's unlimited now. There was some confusion that there was a cap, a loan to value had to be 125 or 150%. But from what I understand, with certain guidelines that you fill in, you can refi that property into the HARP 2 program without a loan to value issue.
When did you guys notice what was expected to be an increase turned into be a flat? When did they actually start declining, the REOs, where you go, wow, this is not what we anticipated?
For me, it was January 1.
Of
this year, of 2000. Well, you can go back to September of 2008, which is always my 4 years ago. If you go back and you take a look at REOs that were going through the system and at the rate they were going through, and we were all in the summer of 2008, we were busy, new assignments coming in, buyers engaged, property values dropping, but nonetheless, the inventory was being moved. September of 2008, I'm a broken record, SB 1137 was passed by California. It was the first foreclosure moratorium followed by the alphabet soup of modifications and Fannie Freddie moratoriums, and you can literally look at inventory levels and REO assignments coming through the system and track it to 4 years ago, and they have progressively shrank ever since, and as of January of this year, for the most part, practically stopped.
What's interesting about the peak of that you experienced with REO listings came off of a delinquency rate of 4.3%, and we got to 11.2. So your inventory should have doubled maybe 2.5 times. And instead it went the other way. And all of those properties that were churning in the background have now, you know, as we talked at lunch, it's not uncommon to have people 2 years behind now. That's
very common.
That's the rule as opposed to the exception.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
During the decline you guys are meeting all these people that have control of the inventory. Are they in a position to actually know what's going to occur when they're discussing, you know, well, ramp up? Is this somebody that's in the know? Are they being told to tell you this? And do you ever believe that you were being told something that wasn't true intentionally?
I don't think anything was intentional, but they do not know. I finally said, do you know or do you not know? And these are regional managers for the Western United States. And they said, honestly, we have no idea. And we have no idea whether, I don't have any idea whether I will have a job next month.
Yeah. I think those decisions are being made at a level far above the folks that certainly I'm talking with. And I don't know at what level that is, but I agree with Steve. The people that I talk to at the banks I'm doing business with, they just, and if they do know, they're not saying, but I just don't believe they know where and when this inventory is coming.
Can you recall what was the last conversation where you actually were given hope that the volume was going to go up instead of down? I mean, is that 3 years ago or a year ago?
Well, there was two things for me, probably 2 years ago. I think it was August of 2010, prior to the robo-signing scandal. One of the larger, you know, banks out there started gathering up a bunch of agents, started doing training, hundreds and hundreds of agents in Southern California, and they never came right out and said, gear up, there's going to be inventory, but it was like, well, this is obvious. I'm in a room with 800 other REO brokers in Southern California. We're supposed to, or being, in effect, told to be prepared and be trained, and everybody in that room left there thinking, hey, we're going to have some inventory. 2 months later, robo-signing scandal kicked in, and frankly, you know, all of 2011, am I got my years right? 2011, yeah, tail part of 2010 and all of 2011, we basically was fooling around with that. Robo-signing scandal seemed to be behind us, 6 months ago?
Mm-hmm.
First quarter of 2012. I was expecting some stuff to happen. I expected some inventory, but nothing. I mean, here we are.
I was at conferences in March. I went to five of them, and everybody anticipated more. They would have more inventory.
In March of 2012.
That's right.
Okay.
They all thought they would have more inventory this year. And I think Lance is correct. I think the people that we talk to just aren't in the know. They're not at the level where they really get to be in on the decision making and what's really going to happen.
Okay. If you have a listing that's an REO tomorrow and you put it in the market, in the MLS at full price, what's the reaction? Is there a buyer?
There's 25 to 50 offers within, well, certainly 5 or 10 within the first several hours or 24 hours. Within 72 hours, most of the banks don't want to see offers within 72 hours of the time it's listed. They do want to give everybody an opportunity. Within 72 hours, if it's anywhere close to a semi-desirable property, you'll have between 30 and 50 offers on it. A lot of them cash.
Yeah.
Investors and, frankly, not and retail buyers that want to buy. So the demand is ridiculous. It's actually the part of this frustration because the buying side of the transaction is engaged. They want to buy. Investors want to buy. We talked earlier. They're willing to pay above retail. Your average consumer, there's enough. In that, let's face it. We're Inland Empire. Our unemployment rate in the Inland Empire is, what, 11?
Mid-teens.
Mid-teens. Okay, it's high. It's above 10%, 11, 12%.
Yeah.
There are enough people in the Inland Empire, regular consumers, that have enough confidence in their job and their current employment situation and their income that they want to buy. They like the prices. They love the interest rates. And frankly, the investors are, my God, the investors are like roaches out there. I mean, they're just coming out of the woodwork.
Couldn't you think of a better word?
That's a good word. I like, you know, but obviously the selling side of the equation is broken. The inventory is broken. We could sell, we talked earlier, four, five, six times as many properties as we're, 10 times as many properties as we're selling currently.
And it's, you know, it's one of the frustrating things. It can't come from the normal source, which is the private owner, because they're upside down, unless it's in the form of a short sale. And that takes some time. And we'll cover that a little bit later. But right now, Moreno Valley, you said, has a couple hundred properties. And usually there's 300 properties that are in escrow.
We've sold in the city of Moreno Valley approximately 300 properties a month forever. I mean, you could go back and look at 20 years worth of data. And that the city has been able to absorb 300 closed transactions per month for 20 years. There are 200 properties for sale in the entire city today.
In 2008, I remember doing this search just because when we used to have boot camps, I would pull 100 grand and below. And, you know, in the MLS, when you pull a search that has too many properties over 500, it messes with the data. So I had to back it down to 90,000. And there were 500 properties listed in Moreno Valley under 90 grand
yep.
in 08. And now there's not more. There's 200 period.
And the entire city.
Now, here's another thing that at another boot camp when I was thinking about teaching in something like 2006, because I knew this was going to start to happen, I searched for properties under 300 grand in Moreno Valley, and there were three, and they were all two-bedroom houses that were 800 and 900 square feet.
Right.
If you search under 300 grand or over 300 grand in Moreno Valley now, there's probably not 15 listings, and they're all 4,000 square feet. So it's just a ridiculous time where you just don't have enough inventory. Is there any band of inventory that you still think might take a price hit in the spectrum?
I do. The ultra inflated high end stuff. I mean, the financing is difficult. It's still hard to get jumbo loans and what have you. Now, again, let's face it, in the Empire, that's a narrower bandwidth. But the high end marketplace, I think, is absolutely in tune for some more pain. You know, the bottom end entry level stuff, we talked earlier, I think we're going to see significant price increases in that entry level property. That $100,000, $120,000. I mean, heck, it's hard to find a $100,000 property in the Inland Empire now. It's hard to find a $120,000, $130,000 property in the Inland Empire. But that upper end stuff, the $800,000 property
in the jumbo price ranges, it's almost impossible to find a buyer that qualifies.
Right. Right.
And there's a lot of people that have, just what you mentioned at lunch, there's a lot of people that occupy a property that could no longer buy it.
Correct.
That's right. Huge.
Yeah, and that replacement buyer isn't really waiting in the wings, either capable or just unwilling. And I know the lending world there is very difficult. There was a transaction where I was familiar with it where somebody had an 800 FICO score, $1 million in the bank and sufficient income. And right at the end, they were turned down for the loan. They had to end up putting on $1,050,000 purchase. They ended up getting $600,000 down to get a conventional loan.
Wow. So well, then that puts pressure on that upper end market.
Yeah, that's the one area that might still have pressure. And also that's in Orange County, too, you know, where they think that's they're immune. It's still not true. Appraisal issues, is that, I'm in escrow with any time, let's say, 25 properties, and I would say 20 out of 25, there's some kind of appraisal issue that comes up.
I have appraisal issues every day.
Every day.
With the stuff that we're selling. And, we'll put it in the MLS for $200,000. We'll have it'll get bidded up to $230,000, and it'll only appraise for $200,000 or $210,000.
Yeah.
Something like that. And that's a problem.
Which is brutal for the FHA and low down payment conventional buyers because they're almost pretty much locked out.
Part of the definition of market value used to be what a willing buyer was going to pay. And that was like the statement of, we need to pay attention to that, especially when you got 25 offers, that you would think, okay, that's a statement that market value has changed. Interest rates are creating a payment that's usually saving a buyer $6,000 a year in housing costs.
Yeah, but the appraisers, and I know appraisals is always a sensitive issue, specifically it seems like with Bruce, because it seems like we always talk about him.
We got 30 seconds, by the way.
I don't know. I think the appraisers' hands are tied. You look back at those comps, and it's going to be tough. Appraisals are going to be driven up by cash buyers, I think.
Okay. All right. We better stop for this segment. We've been joined by Steve Silva, Lance Martin, and Mike Novak-Smith in discussing the future status of where inventory is going to come from for their business and what inventory investors might find to buy. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Caldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Elite Auctions, FIBI for Home Investors by Investors, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Incorporated, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Board of Realtors, Stars Photography, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Tony Alvarez, Weston South Coast Plaza. See iSurvivedRealEstate.com for more on the event and all of the I Survived Real Estate sponsors.